What is up, network? Today's podcast is supported by Bose Aviation. With over 30 years of serving active noise-canceling headsets to pilots, Bose is known for performance, quality, and reliability. The A20 Aviation headset, with 30% greater noise reduction than conventional aviation headsets, is one of the lightest, most comfortable around-ear headsets on the market. The ProFlight Series 2 builds upon the advanced technology of the original and is the most lightweight, compact, and comfortable aviation headset Bose has ever produced. To see which headset is right for you, visit bose.com/aviation. Network, hello. It is I, Adam, back with you again for another The Pilot Network podcast. I have a guest today that is known by many and has done something that I find to be remarkably interesting. Him and I have a lot of shared interests in the world of self-growth and biohacking and learning, and we'll call it evidence-based growth. And the reason is, well, he says it better than I do. Let me just read a bit from his website. The science of success is about the search for evidence-based personal growth. It's about exploring ways to improve your decision-making, understand your mind and how psychology rules the world around you, and learn from experts and thought leaders about ways we can become better versions of ourselves. We have listeners in over 100 countries, have hit number one, new and noteworthy on iTunes, and have more than 5 million downloads. From neuroscientists, psychologists, entrepreneurs, and even FBI hostage negotiators, we explore these topics with fascinating experts as our guides. And we have the host of the Science of Success podcast, Matthew Bodner, with us today. Matt, welcome to the Pilot Network podcast. It is truly an honor to have you on board.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for having me on the show. That was quite an intro, and thank you very much for all the kind words about the show. I'm super pumped to be here, and I hope to be able to share some interesting insights with your audience, which sounds like is a bunch of badasses, basically.
Well, they try to be. I'm not one of them, but I'll definitely speak for the rest of them. They try. A few of them have gone into the entrepreneurial world, such as yourself, done something, a lot of things that are totally different. We've had a few of them on. But I think those types of minds really penetrate the pilot community. Once we get into the aviation world, there's so many different things that you can get involved in. So you almost have to have an entrepreneurial mindset to go out and try new things and take that leap of faith, because after you get into the rut or the day-to-day grind, it can be a job you really enjoy, but there's more out there, and to take that big step is challenging. So how did you take that first step, and why did you create the Science of Success? How did this become a thing?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And before I even tell you the story of the show being created, which is essentially just a series of kind of fortuitous and crazy accidents that stack together, but the point you made about having a mindset of taking risk, of experimenting, of putting yourself out there, that to me is key to really succeeding in anything that you're doing. Whether you want to be the most badass pilot, and by the way, I don't know, maybe I'm like triggering your iTunes explicit thing, or you're going to have to like bleep me out. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
But whether you want to be...
That's light. These are aviators. It's, you know, the whole term swear like a sailor. I think aviators can give them a run for their money.
Okay, nice. Well, anyway, all that to say, you know, whether you want to be the best pilot of all time, whether you want to start a company, whether you want to be the best dad of all time, all of these things, the quest that I've been on for pretty much my entire adult life has been to try and study the most successful people in history and in our present day, and really even digging into the science and the research around why are they successful? What does the science say about how you can be better, how you can be smarter, how you can sleep better, how you can influence people, how you can be happier, all of this stuff. And really distilling all of that down into, no matter what the end game is, there's tons and tons and tons of shared lessons and commonalities. And that's what, to me, one of the biggest takeaways is, it doesn't matter where you're going, you can borrow a lot of these lessons. And in many ways, the name of the show, The Science of Success, I think hampers us a little bit, only in the sense that when people think of success, a lot of times they think of money, fame, power, whatever it is. But to me, success is really much, much broader than that. And it's all about thriving at whatever you want to do or whatever you're trying to achieve. And so, you know, we were even talking about some of these things in the pre-show, but there's so many shared lessons about being successful at anything that you can, that would make you a better pilot, that would make you a better entrepreneur, that would make you a better risk taker, that would make you a better father, et cetera. And that's really what drove that passion for, like, how can I learn this skill set that applies to everything in my life? That, because to me, one of the questions that I've been obsessed with is, and as a Tim Ferriss fan, I'm sure you think about this too, is how can I be more high leverage? Mm-hmm. How can I get more results for the same amount of time spent? And to me, one of the cornerstone strategies of getting more results for the same amount of time and energy is to master skills that apply to everything. Because if you can get better at a skill that applies to everything in your life, then all of that stuff is automatically better. And that starts to compound and stack and improve, no matter whether you're negotiating to buy a new house, doesn't matter if you're in an argument with your significant other. It doesn't matter if you're trying to sell somebody your first sale for your new business, or if you're dealing with a boss who's a pain in the butt. All of that stuff is benefited by mastering these skills and these tactics and strategies. And so that's a long answer, and I haven't even told you yet the story of how I started the show. So do you want me to just jump into that, or do you want
go for it, man? Yeah, no, that's not a long answer at all. They're used to hearing me, and I'm the most long-winded person on the show, so you can't top the host. Go for it. Tell us how it became the Science of Success.
Yeah, so the show started, I'm an investor by trade, and even still today, really my focus is essentially private equity, buying companies, that kind of stuff. And I have always been really into personal development. I've always wanted to figure out, how can I achieve everything I want to achieve in my life? And studying people who've done that was one of the first steps. And so I started studying the greatest investor of all time, Warren Buffett. And naturally, that's a pretty logical place to start. But I had this genius idea, hey, I should just start studying this guy. So I started reading a bunch of his stuff. And if you study enough Buffett, you come across this guy named Charlie Munger. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Munger is not an everyday name like Warren Buffett is, but he is Buffett's business partner. He's a billionaire. He's a really, really, really sharp thinker. And one of the things that Munger talks about extensively is the importance of understanding psychology. And he talks about how in business, in life, really almost anything that you do, unless you're doing hard physics, and even then you're still dealing with people, everything you do is human interaction at the end of the day. And obviously there's parts of aviation that aren't human interaction, but you know, if you're looking at, for example, like cause of accidents and stuff, how many times is pilot error one of the major causes, right? And if you're looking at almost any endeavor in life, especially stuff in business, psychology underpins all of that. And so that's what Munger talks about. And that sort of piqued my interest in psychology. I went down this rabbit hole of reading all kinds of psychology research books, influenced by Robert Cialdini, which is probably one of the Bibles of psychology and understanding human behavior. Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely is another really good book about that. And I just started sharing these lessons with people that I knew. So I would sit down, and at one point I was actually on the beach in Puerto Rico with a buddy of mine who had just started a company. And we were just talking about all this stuff. And he was like, dude, this is so helpful and interesting. Can you make this into a PowerPoint and share it with my team that's founding this company? And I was like, sure. Like, I never thought of doing anything like that, but I'm happy to do it. So I did that, shared it. And then I basically put that on the shelf for 6 months and never thought about it again. Eventually, a buddy of mine, I was telling him that story, and he was like, dude, why don't you share that with like other people that you do business with, business partners, that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I started doing that and shared it with a number of people, started sharing it with friends and acquaintances and that kind of thing. And eventually, one of the people I shared it with owned a really small science news website, which was called redorbit.com. I don't even know if it still exists or not. But he was basically like, dude, this stuff is awesome. Let's make it into a podcast and we'll put it on my website. And I was like, I don't know anything about podcasting, but I can talk about this stuff and I'm really interested in it and I want to interview experts about it. So let's try it out. And you know, that series of events, if you notice, I wasn't the one who thought of the original presentation. I wasn't the one who thought of sharing it. I wasn't the one who thought of starting a podcast. All of that ended up, we did an experiment basically, which I think is one of the best methodologies for if you want to do anything, I would highly recommend, instead of just jumping off a cliff and just diving in, do a bunch of small experiments until something really gets traction, and then start doubling down on that. And so the podcast started as an experiment, basically, that ended up getting way more traction than we thought. You know, started out, we got a couple thousand downloads, and then it just started ramping up. And we hit, within 2 or 3 months of launching, we hit number one new and noteworthy, and really started gaining a bunch of traction. And so we were like, oh, wow, this is awesome. We're having so much fun. And then about 3 months in, my partner in the podcast, who's the guy who owned this website, sold the website and basically just dumped the podcast. And so I had nobody to edit it, nobody to distribute it, nothing. And the podcast basically almost died. And then I had to figure everything out for myself and essentially relaunch the show. And that was like 4 years. It was actually in March of 2016.
Okay.
And so, yeah, 4 years ago in about a month. And since then, I've been piloting the show on my own, and it's been a fun journey.
Yeah, that's, we don't have the same hockey stick trajectory here at the Pilot Network podcast, but we're working on it. And I think one of the things that you said that I really liked, and I want to hammer home with our listeners, is that experimental mindset. I think one of the big things that we as aviators, we go through, and we're going to get into this here in a few minutes, but we as aviators kind of go through this learning process where it's, when you first start, you get hammered with information, and then you rote memorize it, and then you move on to the next thing, and you just keep going. And it's this process of, okay, I got to get to the next thing. And then one day I'll have all my certifications, or I'll finish pilot training for the military, and I'm done. And then I can coast or do whatever. And I think one of the things that some guys and gals can get away with, that others, they have to understand it to be effective at their job. And the other thing is, when they go back out and they want to teach what they're doing, you can't rote memorize and then try to teach something. It just doesn't work. You have to understand it. And what I've found, and I did this by accident, and I never really knew that I was doing it until we talked about in the pre-show and through listening to your podcast and others like you, I realized that I was not a very good learner, and I had to experiment with different styles of learning to get to where I wanted to be. And one of the things I did was I would experiment with new ideas. Before I heard it on a podcast or I read about it, I'd be like, okay, how's the best way to memorize something? Is it for me to understand it fully, or is it for me to memorize it and then try to recite it like an actor would recite his lines, and then go back and try to attach emotions to it? All different flavors of
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and what I found was, in pilot training, we have these things called notes, warnings, cautions, and you have to memorize them at the time. And our flight commander gave us an option: you can either try to explain them, or you can memorize them and spit them back out. Well, we thought it'd be easier to try to explain them. Well, when you don't know anything about a subject and you're trying to explain it to experts, it doesn't work very well. Our group did not fare well at all, and we were punished accordingly. Now, when we try to memorize them, we realized that rote memorization had its place there, because we needed to memorize it for the tempo at which we were learning, but then we were able to memorize it and go back and actually understand what the verbiage of those notes, warnings, cautions were saying. And what I did to memorize it was attach emotion to it. So there was one about breaking the canopy open if you ever got stuck in the airplane and you had to break it open on the ground because the canopy wouldn't pop off. And I remember it was the canopy breaker tool. I believe it was, you turned it away from you so you wouldn't get a rearward glancing blow and it wouldn't hit you in the head as it flew off the canopy.
Fair enough.
Fair enough, right? And I thought, well, damn, that would hurt a lot. So I thought, oh, you know, and not realizing that I was putting this in my head as an emotion, as pain that would happen if I did this. And I realized that, man, I could pick stuff up a lot faster that way. And not only pick it up, but understand what I was learning. So I wanted to just share a little story there, a caveat to how to use that experimental mindset of trying different things to learn something, not only rapidly, but learn it well enough so you can explain it to somebody else and sound like an expert or somebody close to it.
So I want to come back to learning, because I think it's a really important topic and we can go way deep on that.
Yeah.
But even before we do, experiments, is this whole experimental mindset, I want to put a spin on this that could be really interesting for your audience. To me, the learning is a good example. The example you just used is kind of experimenting with learning styles is important. To me, the experimental methodology, and whether you're talking about, you know, you mentioned to me in the pre-show that a lot of people are thinking about what's my career trajectory? What's the next step? What do I do? How do I do? Do I have a side hustle? Do I become, you know, a commercial pilot? Like all these different questions in your life. The great thing about being a pilot is that you have this super structured learning system that's very, very regimented and very detailed. The thing that you have to unlearn to succeed outside of aviation, or even to succeed in the human aspects of aviation, not the flying aspect, because this stuff is super important with the flying aspect, right?
Yeah.
But is that in flying, the risk is that if you screw up, you're going to die. Right. And actually, that's one of my all time favorite quotes about the importance of checklists. And I'll paraphrase it, but it's basically like the difference between doctors and pilots is that the pilot goes down with the ship. Right. And so that's why pilots follow their checklists more effectively than doctors do. But anyway, all of that to say, the stakes are super, super high. And that's why the learning is so rigid, so structured. You have to follow the checklist. You have to do everything. That's a valuable skill set, but it's also like the opposite of that skill set is also really valuable. Mm-hmm. And realizing that when you start to get into these human endeavors, things like your career, things like taking business risks, things, even taking emotional risks in your life, dealing with relationships, that kind of stuff, the regimented, really risk-averse, highly structured approach can actually sabotage you in a lot of ways. And so I would encourage your listeners to think about outside of aviation, what are some areas where maybe that pilot mindset is actually hampering you?
And
you
think about,
because one of my favorite quotes from Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, is that most decisions are reversible, right? And most risks can be reversed. So if you take a risky decision, maybe you can reverse it. So many people get stuck on, I don't know how this decision is going to pan out, so I can't take the risk. But the reality is, like, if the risk is small or reversible, just take it, figure it out, yeah, and then learn from there. But if your mindset is like, I have to structurally remove every piece of risk from the equation before I take the first step, which is in many ways the mindset of an aviator, that's going to hamper you from really taking a lot of risks in your life and your career. So I would just say that to me, that whole kind of experimentation topic, there could be like a mindset piece to that. Is a really interesting component that I would at least investigate if I was an aviator about, am I bringing that into my life in places where maybe it's not the best mental model that's not going to serve me as effectively as possible for maximizing the other result I'm trying to optimize for? Because you may not be trying to optimize for perfect safety. Maybe you even want to have a little bit of danger.
Sure.
In, you know, whether it's in your business life or a startup venture or whatever, as opposed to when you're flying a plane, which obviously you have to do everything to keep yourself as safe as possible.
Yeah. It's kind of the foremost thing on everybody's mind. It's interesting that you bring that up in the way you brought it up. I've never really thought about it in that twist, taking what you've learned. Yoda says it best. You must unlearn what you have learned, right?
That's right.
It, just taking that piece of it though and saying, okay, yeah, you're really, really good at structural definition in almost any protocol that you're going to be given. So a fighter pilot has all of his checklists memorized. How many of the ever there are in his aircraft for what he's going to do, he has them all memorized, or she has them all memorized. I tend to go gender neutral, and most pilots get it, but I do have a couple friends out there who always give me a rash of hell when I don't include them. So I'm sorry, and I'll say one of her names, Kirsten. I apologize because she's one of those people. God bless her. But with fighter pilots, they have little tiny cockpit, lots of stuff going on, and that checklist that they have is very thick. However, they have that whole thing memorized. Because it's rote memorization, do this, then do that, then do this. The thing that we do as pilots is there's a piece to that in the Air Force. It's maintaining aircraft control, analyzing the situation, take the appropriate action, and then land as soon as conditions permit. That's like one of the first things we learn in Air Force pilot training. If you take what I just said there in the beginning, it's maintain aircraft control. That's the safety part. That's the keep yourself alive. Then you analyze the situation. That actually takes some thinking. That takes what's actually happening? Look at all this stuff that I'm being given, all this input. Let the computer sort it out. Now the algorithm just clicked and boom, take the appropriate action. The appropriate action, more times than not, is this exact checklist that you have to do. And then land as soon as conditions permit. That should be the outcome. I always thought that that was the outcome piece of everything that you've done. After that, you're safe now. Now, what I think and the way you said it and what I really love about it is you're taking that one step further instead of saying, okay, you do these rote actions, you have these things memorized, is you can use these, but use them in a thought-filled manner. Like, hey, if you have a checklist for you do something every morning, you have your routine, boom, you knock out your routine, right? Tim Ferriss, Jocko Willink, all these guys, they have their routines in the morning. Well, take it one step, maybe one step back or one step forward. Why am I doing this? Is this, I'm doing it because I've heard it a million times, I've done it a million times. No, there's a reason. Hey, I look down later in the day, I missed my morning routine and man, I feel like garbage. This makes me human. This makes me interact better with other people. And then take it and you can modify those little checklists that you do and use that human piece. I love the way you can blend those things together. I think that's such a unique thing in aviation because like you said, we do go down with the ship and there's not a lot of other jobs out there that, you know, that you're the first one in the dirt. My dad always used to ask me, he goes, well, don't you think about everybody in the back? And I go, Dad, if there's an emergency going on, the first person I'm thinking about is me. And he goes, well, that's selfish of you. And I said, Dad, if I make it through, there's a pretty good chance that everybody in the back's going to be okay. If I don't, there's a really good chance that everybody in the back's not going to be very okay.
Yeah. Said, that's a pretty good insight.
Yeah. When he goes, when you think about it like that, I go, yeah. And I said, call us selfish, but it's selfish for your safety, not just ours. So I want to carry that over a little bit from that. The checklist lifestyle that we live and that rote memorization, learning, all that stuff is critical. But I think there's other stuff that you, and this is where I think I can't wait for our group to go and devour your podcast because there's all the guests you have, number one, and all the research you've done. The coolest stuff is, in my mind, is all, I mean, you've talked about fatigue mitigation and how to rest, how to hack your body for ultimate performance and all that good stuff. If you have one or two little nuggets that you want to throw out there that are things like, oh, this is definitely a must for pilots. Besides, I mean, obvious it's, you know, get your 8 hours, eat right, exercise. Yeah, well, people don't always do that. What's the next step for those who are doing that? Get the baseline. What's that next step? What are those little nuggets that you've seen with all these interviews and great people that you've talked to?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. I mean, the irony is, you hit on some of the major stuff, right? And if one of my favorite quotes, and I'll paraphrase, I don't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it's from Jim Rohn. It's basically, there is no secret to success. It's just mastery of the fundamentals, right? And yeah. So the reality is, I mean, we can get into some specific tactical stuff, but if you look at the 80-20 principle of what are the few recommendations that I hear over and over and over again that make the biggest impact for the least amount of effort, it's basically sleep 8 hours, which is massive. Like sleep is huge. Meditate, which is another, probably the most recommended thing on the show, is to meditate regularly.
Yes.
Exercise, you know, eat well. And then the other one that we hear and we talk about all the time on the show, but you don't hear really mentioned a lot, but is one of the biggest commonalities of world-class performers, is having what the research calls contemplative routines in your life. And a contemplative routine, you actually touched on the idea behind a contemplative routine a minute ago, which is basically the idea of stepping back and asking yourself why, right? Getting some perspective on why am I doing this? You used it in the context of a morning routine. Why is this my morning routine, right? Or why am I spending my time doing this? Or what am I doing with my life, right? What are my goals for this year, for the next 5 years, for the next 20 years, for my lifetime, all of that kind of stuff. Contemplative routines are basically this idea of just, instead of, we're constantly living in this state of almost pure reactivity where we're getting emails, we're getting text messages, social media, Twitter, all of this stuff, the news, we're constantly bombarded by external stimulus, right? All the time. There's an infinite amount, literally an infinite amount of stimulus that can be hitting you, notifications on your phone constantly blaring. And if you don't take a little bit of time to just step back and create space in your life to ask and answer some of the simple but really, really important questions, you're robbing yourself of an opportunity to not only get rid of a lot of the stuff that might be causing unhappiness, wasting your time, all of that kind of stuff, but also to create more opportunity and more space for the things that really matter, the things that are important, the things that are driving you towards your goals and desires and what you actually want to achieve in your life. So to me, the three or four or five, whatever, biggest things, sleep, meditation, contemplative routines are massive. And that's one of the ones that doesn't get talked about as much in the day-to-day and like most of the major conversations. But that to me, if you look at the science, and we've had a ton of people on the show come and talk about the importance of that, contemplative routines are probably one of the major behavior patterns of really high achievers that is almost ubiquitous across, regardless of what kind of field they're in. People who are really successful typically have contemplative routines in their lives.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've done my own, and I think I'm not perfect. I don't think anybody is. I know there's some that are far better than others, and I try to keep my routine to some level of consistency. And one of the things that I found as an aviator, as somebody who has, as a commercial aviator, somebody who has layovers that are a little bit longer, or more often I go on a little bit longer trips. One of the big things that I found is when I get out of routine, when I get out of whack at home, well, it is challenging when you have a 3-year-old running in the morning and you're trying to meditate and she wants to play. You're probably going to choose the 3-year-old over meditation because, well, that's if you're a girl dad, that's what you want to do. And I think one of the things that I noticed was when I go back out on the road, that's my chance to rehack the routine, get it started up again. Because I think we all talk about the contemplative routine, who are into this kind of stuff in this field, like you guys are, who do it professionally, and us who are amateurs and talk about it. We all talk about meditating or breathing ritual or whatever the case might be. But one of the things that I never hear talked about is what happens when you fall out? What happens when the routine falls apart? And when busy life will create that, in a busy life where it's not predictable, I'm a pilot. It's not a predictable life. My schedule is all over the place sometimes. I have a trip shortly here where I'll be going deadheading in one spot and then flying to Europe and then coming back. And then I get like a day off and then I got to start doing military work. So, I mean, that's not a very normalized schedule. My sleep schedule is really screwed up too. And one of the things that I found is when I get back out on the road, if I take time, first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, especially if it's a morning where I have ample time before I have to go fly, I start up my routine. If I don't have a lot of time, I will do at least one thing. If it's small, whether it's maybe 10 pushups, anything that makes me stop for a second and just go, okay, wait, you got a long day ahead of you. You got to fly back from Europe, or you don't have a lot of time to get down to the bus, but just do one thing and then think about it when you're on the bus ride over. Don't just launch in, jump in the shower, boom, off you go. And the next thing you know, you're loading your flight plan on your electric flight bag and you're already in the airplane and you haven't done anything to think about yourself.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us as aviators think we've always got to do it. We are fairly type A and perfectionist oriented for whatever term, however you want to define perfectionism, saying, well, I've got to have this. I got to meditate for 10 to 20 minutes. And then I've got to do my Wim Hof breathing followed by a cold shower, followed by I've got to have my 30 grams of protein, you know, whatever thing you want to put in that takes 2 hours. That's not what this is about. It's about finding something small that fits in your schedule that you can go, okay, take a second. Now I can go do a much better job than I was going to do if I didn't do that. And the perfect time to do that is on your layovers. And so my advice to the listeners out there, try using some of this stuff on your layovers. A great way to start is listen to some of these podcasts that are out there. Science of Success is one of my go-tos. I only have about five and I keep dwindling them down. They keep getting cut because there's just too much out there. Like you said, there's too much stimuli. So you have to pick and choose and then pick it and go with it. And I think moving on that, I'm a big fan of Matt Walker, PhDs, Why We Sleep. I'm in the middle of his book. I've listened to hours of him talking on podcast, watched many of his YouTube videos and TED Talks. The people that you've talked with, I don't think there is a way to mitigate the rest issues that pilots face. I don't know if there's a way that where I'm going to be able to counteract that due to time zone changing rapidly and all that stuff. Have you ever talked to anybody or heard something that maybe there is something out there that help a little bit? Because all the stuff that I've looked at, I can't find anything.
So, I mean, that's one. There's like three or four things you said that I will get to the answer of how do pilots mitigate their rest issues. I have maybe one solution, but that's definitely a tricky question.
Okay.
One, for people who don't know who Matthew Walker is, he's basically one of the world's preeminent sleep experts.
Yes.
And before spending hours reading his book or whatever, if you want a short entry point into his research, we interviewed him on the show. So check out that interview.
That's right. That's right. That's where that was my first introduction to Matt.
Nice. Walker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
I really wanted him. I think he'd be perfect for this group because of, well, I actually would love to just say, hey, Matt,
just email him.
Yeah. Do you want 30,000 pilots to come and show up at your sleep center and you can figure out how screwed up our brains all are? Because I'm sure we would love to see that. Unfortunately, I think you'd get a lot of guys quitting their job and going on to be real estate agents and managers at Home Depot because they would go, maybe this isn't for me anymore. But yeah, and that's where, the first introduction I got of Matthew Walker was there, and a friend of mine introduced me to his book, and I've been an acolyte.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So coming back to your question about pilot sleep.
Yeah.
Definitely not an expert on that, but there is I've been doing a lot of quote unquote biohacking of my sleep recently and looking at sleep analytics and that kind of stuff. And one of the things, it's certainly not for everybody, but we actually had an interview. I actually have to look up who the guest was. I can look that up really quickly, but we had an interview recently where a guest told me about this technology that they've recently discovered. And essentially what it is there's an array of sleep trackers that are out on the market, right? So the lower end, quote unquote, of sleep trackers are basically things like the Fitbit bracelet and that kind of stuff, which are essentially glorified accelerometers that if you toss and turn and roll around, whatever, it kind of says, oh, you're awake. And they do a little bit of they're testing your heartbeat and that kind of stuff, but they can't really meaningfully distinguish what sleep phases you're in and give you really reliable sleep data. They're decent, but they're not great. There are these new headbands that have come on the market, and there's a couple. The Philips has one. I forget the exact name of it. The one that I actually have is called the Dream 2. It's DREEM2. And I've been using it and really liking it. One, they're great from an analytics standpoint because it's like reads your brain waves and realizes exactly what sleep phase you're in and gives you crazy detailed analytics about your sleep, which is really interesting. But even beyond that, there's this new research, and we had a guest who talked about the science behind this, Dr. Daniel Gartenberg, who was recently on The Science of Success, that he delves into a little bit more of the science, but the long and short of it is that there's this research where they've looked at brainwave patterns. And when you're in certain phases of sleep, there's essentially three main phases, and there's different names in the science than what I'm going to call them, but these are the simplest ways to think about it. You have deep sleep, which is essentially where your body's doing a lot of the restorative work, that kind of stuff. You have REM sleep, which is where your rapid eye movement, where you're having dreams and that kind of stuff, consolidating memories. And then you just have light sleep, which is basically where you're sleeping, but you're not doing either of the other two phases. It's the least valuable sleep phase. Deep sleep is the best from like a physical health standpoint. What this technology does is it reads when your brain waves are in a deep sleep state, and it plays what they call in the science pink noise. So I'm sure you've probably heard of white noise. I don't know why they call it pink noise or what the difference is, but basically they play this pink noise. They play it with vibrations to your inner ear when you have the headband on that basically, and there's a bunch of scientific studies they've done that show that this improves it. It basically enhances the quality of your deep sleep so that it's not that you're getting more sleep, but the sleep that you're already getting, they're essentially altering or amplifying the brain waves that are happening in the deep sleep phase and getting more value out of deep sleep via the introduction of these subtle pink noise sounds. And again, I can't intelligently give you the nitty gritty on the science, but we did have an interview where we went into that. And if you do some homework on the Dream 2 or the Philips, I forget the name of their headset, but Philips has a headset as well. And there's two or three others on the market. I just did some homework in the Dream 2. I'm definitely not affiliated with it anyway, but just seemed like the best one or the one that I like the most. So I got it. It's not cheap. It's like $500.
Okay.
But if you value your sleep, which if you're a fan of Matthew Walker, you know, he talks about how important sleep is. To me, I was like, you know what? I'm just curious. Like, how is my sleep? What can I do to improve it? Can I maximize my deep sleep more effectively? And to me, spending $500 to improve my sleep quality should have a really material ROI over time on quality of life, and maybe even actual on like a dollar output.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that very well could have an actual ROI on how much money that comes in just from spending $500 on a little headband that could change your life, essentially. Because the way I look at it is, as I'm reading Matthew Walker, as I've listened to, like I said, countless hours of, he's another podcast out there that I've recently discovered, and I'm sure you've already been listening to The Drive by Dr. Peter Attia.
Yeah, definitely familiar with him.
Yeah, and I that's where that was the last I listened to his Matthew Walker's 3 hours or 6 hours of the discussion with Peter Attia, and it's like, wow. And that's before they got into the question and answer stuff. The question and answer stuff is like another 4 hours. And I said, yeah, that's like behind his paywall. But I said, okay, I think I'm buying this because I can't get enough of this stuff. And it's very high level science discussion. But one of the things I wanted to ask you in regard to the Dream 2 before I go any further was, is the Dream 2, does that also do like the Oura Ring or Fitbit where it, well, more than the Fitbit, where it actually records to data and then you can track. So it shows you, okay, you're in REM and non-REM.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Like it fully plugs into things like Apple Health and that kind of stuff. And
okay, cool.
I mean, every morning when I get up, I can see how many hours I was asleep, when I was in deep sleep, when I was in REM sleep, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It just gives you, with a brainwave EKG or whatever, it gives you a lot more accuracy around when you're in the right sleep phases, and gives the ability to actually interact with those brain waves and enhance your deep sleep because it's on your head, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw the Oura Ring for the first time. A fellow crew member had it and he showed
me
all the cool stuff that it did. And I was like, whoa, this thing's pretty wild.
I also just ordered an Oura Ring too. Yeah. I don't even have it yet, but that's another one that I'm experimenting with. But actually, less to me, the metric that the Oura Ring supposedly really got at is heart rate variability.
Yeah.
Which is I'm sure you've come across it. We actually haven't done a ton of stuff on it on the Science of Success, but it's basically like the metric that tons of people are talking about is super important and a really good predictor of performance and all this stuff. And Josh Waitzkin, who, if you're a Tim Ferriss fan, he was the second episode ever on Tim Ferriss, and he's done a couple more interviews with Tim, is one of my all-time favorite thinkers, writers, whatever, and he's really, really into heart rate variability. So that's part of the motivation for me to get an Oura Ring. But I do want to come back to, because I have a couple more like quick hit tips.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, take it over, man.
I kind of jumped straight into the most extreme, like, I mean, there's some other supplement stuff you could probably mess with, but to me, some of the basic stuff, if you're not doing it, and I'm not a pilot, so take this with a grain of salt, because maybe I don't understand the conditions on the ground or in the air, as it were, like per se, but alcohol is bad for sleep. Nobody wants to hear that, but it's the truth, right? Mm-hmm. So even like nightcaps is not good for you. Like, it dramatically impairs sleep quality and restorative effects of sleep and all this kind of stuff. So don't drink if you want to get a good night's sleep. I know probably a lot of people don't want to hear that, but that's not science.
No, nobody wants to hear that, but yeah.
caffeine is bad for your sleep, right? No caffeine 12 hours before you're going to try to sleep, or 8 hours before you're going to try to sleep. Really, just the less caffeine generally you have, the better from a sleep standpoint. So even if you don't consciously feel the effects and you say that you can fall asleep right after having a cup of coffee, which I used to drink a pot of coffee a day, and I used to be able to have a cup of coffee and then immediately go to bed.
Yeah, me too.
The reality is that it's negatively impacting your sleep at a physical level, whether you consciously experience it or realize it. The other like really simple ones, to me, the greatest $5 that you can spend to sleep better is to get a sleep mask. And I sleep with a sleep mask at my house, and I travel with a sleep mask. It is phenomenal because light conditions can vary dramatically, and sleeping in a dark environment is really important. And so you can essentially create a dark environment anywhere with a sleep mask. So that's a really, really simple sleep hack that I would recommend anybody to try. And then the last one is just white noise is also really, really helpful. So it's almost like a sleep mask, and white noise are really good sleep triggers that you can use to train your brain and your body that it's like, hey, time to sleep. And so then even if you only have a limited sleep window, instead of having a cup of coffee 2 hours ago and be like, oh, I should take a nap, and then rustling around and being really tired and restless and maybe not sleeping, you don't have that caffeine, you throw on a sleep mask, you throw on some white noise, and you get some really good rest for a little while, it can be a big difference.
Just to add on to that, I need to practice what I preach a little bit. I've been over caffeinated this week, but I can tell my sleep quality has been affected negatively, badly. And I can tell just because I've been a little over caffeinated. Now, sleep mask, could not agree more. I'm a huge fan. In fact, I got my wife wearing one, and we look like the old Cleaver couple in the bed, you know.
Well, dude, now I have a sleep mask and like a Dream 2, which is this like big head. So I mean, I look like I'm Daft Punk or something when I'm going to sleep at this point.
Well, that's my wife and I, we have our sound machine. My daughter's got the same sound machine in her room. We have both got the sleep mask on, and we're slowly we're working on all electronics out of the room. We've never had a TV in the room. That's slowly.
Wow, props to you.
That's slowly becoming, no phones in the room. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. For all the others out there who don't know this yet, this is mainly a lot of military pilots, and this will help too when you're traveling. If you do have light conditions that you cannot hamper, if you have a hanger that comes off of the rack, and you got the two little alligator clips, take your blackout curtains and put them together and clip it all the way down. That helps immensely to black your room out. Mm,
that's good. Yeah.
Another tip. I don't know how legal this one is, but I'll still say it. I've used it on plenty of airplanes, is take some electrical tape. And if you have the light on the TV or the light on the smoke detector, you can just put a little piece of electrical tape over that, and that wipes out. And I know people are like, oh, that's crazy. And I go, man, read the study about where they shined like a low wattage laser on the back of somebody's knee when they were sleeping, and it affected their brainwave and heart rate while they're sleeping. Little bit of light will screw you up.
Ambient light is really bad for your sleep environment. Yeah. I blacked out every light in my bedroom basically with electrical tape.
Yeah. We're working on that. Our old room was like that. Now in our new house, it's kind of not as good. So we're working on that, but I wanted to throw a couple of those out there for rest stuff. I think most of the guys and gals out there who are airline pilots know that you're going to face fatigue. And one of the things I think, and I'm trying to move past the caffeine deal. I'm going to have a cup of coffee in the morning. I enjoy it way too much. I love the taste of it, and I'm a bulletproof guy. So it's tough for me to kick that habit of, coconut oil and butter and coffee. That's just unbeatable. But with that said, I'm rapidly becoming a proponent of anything after 9:30 is no good. That's no dice anymore, because that'll screw me up at the end of the day. I think, well, those are some awesome just little nuggets. I mean, there's so much more, and your podcast has all of that and way more in it. For those of you out there who want to listen and explore more of not only getting better at resting, but also get better at learning and just getting better at understanding how to, as I put it, early on, is figuring out your growth strategy and how to best make that efficient for yourself. Go and check out Science of Success. But now we get to move to one of my favorite parts of the podcast, and it's the most cheesy feature that we have. It's called, and I'm changing the name a little bit because I was an Air Force guy. So memory items, Matt, are what we have in the airline community that are things that we have to remember without looking in a checklist. So in the Air Force, we called them boldface. And on the T-37, we had an ejection seat, and the ejection boldface was hand grips raised, trigger squeeze. It's a joke that then plays out for the rest of your career. Anytime there's any stress or anything's not going your way, it's hand grips raised, trigger squeeze, or roll inverted and pull until you're no longer available for discussion.
So, I like that.
Yeah, those were all things that got used many times over. But in this, this is your chance to create your own boldface remember item. So I'm going to ask three quick questions. And basically, first thing that come to your mind, I'll just let the listener know what you think. So the first question, the first boldface, is the one thing that the listener should take away about the Science of Success and Matt Bodner.
The biggest thing I would take away is whatever you want to achieve in your life, I would say spend 10 minutes in the next 24 hours without any distractions and just journal to yourself about what do you want to do with your life and what are you doing to move down that road?
Wow. That's going to be tough for a lot of people to do.
It is. I mean, the reality is nobody does it, right? Yeah. And the few people that actually do stuff like that are the people that end up on the paths that they want to end up on.
Yeah.
And if there's a Yogi Berra quote that's something like that, that's if you don't know where you're going, you're probably going to end up there, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know if that's exactly the quote, but you get the idea, right?
Which for
if
sure.
If you don't have a plan, then you're just blowing in the wind, basically. And so to me, the biggest thing I would want you to take away about the show is like the show is dedicated to helping you get where you want to go. And I'm dedicated to looking at the science and the research and bringing people on who are neuroscientists and world's top experts and all kinds of crazy people like that and bringing them on the show to figure out selfishly for myself how I can be the absolute best at everything I want to be the best at. Yeah. And fortunately, I recorded all that stuff and shared it on the internet with tens of thousands of people. And so, if you want to achieve really any goal in your life, I would say check the show out. We have a get started guide too. That's basically like, what are you interested in? And if you click on it, it's like my personal recommendations for getting better sleep, being a better negotiator, being happier, like all this stuff. The show, like this is years and years of my own personal journey to figure this stuff out for myself by interviewing the world's top experts. And I've put it out there for anybody to listen to.
Yeah. And to jump on to exactly what Matt's saying, I've talked about this. There was a podcast where I sometimes just speak about stuff that's going on or something I'm thinking about. We call them the touch and go. And it's just me for about 10 minutes. And one of the ones was, what do I do once I got to where I want to be? Because a lot of us, especially pilots who go in the military, our whole goal for our entire life, i.e. high school and then college, which we think is forever, you graduate, you go to pilot training, you finish up, you have your wings, maybe you get to your squadron, maybe you're a wingman in a fighter squadron or a co-pilot in a heavy unit, or you're a co-pilot in a helicopter squadron or something like that. But you've made it. You're Billy Badass. You're now, you've done it. You've achieved all the dream. And then you go, okay, well there's what's next? And you start realizing that you have to go to work and you run the training shop and then you become an aircraft commander. You sit in the left seat or flight lead, two ship flight lead, maybe a four ship flight lead, a fighter unit. And then you kind of fall into that. Well, okay, now I have to upgrade to instructor. And then you become an evaluator pilot after that shortly. But then you kind of run out of that stuff and you realize you're in your early 30s and you go, okay, I'm not really sure what's next. And the professional goals start falling away as I'm going to be this better, awesome aviator too. I'm going to start working in the office better or more. And then it becomes maybe a political game of making rank or something like that. And then the same thing happens to our civilian side pilots is I'm going to get to this job. Well, then when they get to the airline they've always wanted to fly for and they're a captain there, it's fun. Yeah. You make great money and you get to go and you have your boat and your kids out playing on it or your girlfriend's all over the world or whatever the case is. But then one day you go home and I'm a little bored. You know, I got 4 days off and I'm not a woodworker. I don't have any other real hobbies and you got to try to find that stuff. And I think what you're doing with Science of Success and what you've shown everybody else out there is instead of just randomly throwing yourself into stuff, take a step back and find what you really enjoy. In fact, I'm going through that process right now with physical activity, stuff that I enjoy doing. And I've stumbled on jiu-jitsu over the last year. And I used to like martial arts a little bit, but it's slowly taking over my whole life where it's the thing that I enjoy the most physically and stuff that I really used to like to do is play golf all the time. It's kind of fallen back a little bit. And it was, I sat down and I looked like, hey, what do you really want to do with yourself in this one aspect? And I think you've really nailed it with some of the stuff that you've not only promoted within the show itself, but what you've produced outside of the show is some of those documents that I've got downloaded on my computer that I've read and looked at.
Well, you really hit it earlier when you, and I don't know exactly how you phrased it, and I'll probably botch the aviator lingo for this, but the idea of analyze the situation, right? Step two was analyze the situation. Step three was execute the...
Take the appropriate action.
Take the appropriate action, right? So when you're flying, the appropriate action, as you said earlier, is which checklist are you going to execute, right? Yeah. Are you going to roll, invert, and punch out or whatever? So the problem is in life, you can analyze the situation, but there is almost always not a checklist.
Yep.
Like it just doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been struggling with that question in all the endeavors, unlike aviation, that it's just not defined. Like there's no roadmap. Now there's a great quote that success leaves clues. And I'm out here with a magnifying glass, like Sherlock Holmes, trying to find the clues and just for myself and piece them together and share them with as many people as I can. And that's basically what the show is about, is trying to say, okay, there's no checklist for a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. How do we start to, like, to me, I just said, okay, well, what's the most realistically validated or kind of relevant base? If the world is super uncertain and confusing, mm-hmm. where can I start my search for truth? And to me, it was like science. Is it perfect? No. Do scientific studies get thrown out all the time? Sure. Do they get reverted? Yeah. Do they get proven wrong? Of course. But science is like the most verifiable, most research-based, et cetera, out of all of the available paths to truth in terms of how do you live your life? How do you achieve goals? How do you achieve results? How do you become successful at anything? To me, I basically said, science is a pretty reasonable place to start. So I'm just going to start looking at science and say, what can I pull out of science that I can apply to answering all of those big questions? What do I want to do with my life? How should I spend my time? Where am I going to create the most value? How can I be a better person? How can I achieve? How can I relate to myself better from an emotional standpoint? How can I communicate better to other people? How can I get people to do what I want? Like all of that stuff, I didn't know the answer to any of those questions. And so I just said, all right, I'm just going to go try to interview a bunch of scientists that have done a bunch of research about this stuff and see if I can piece together step by step what that checklist is, what those necessary actions are, whatever the term is.
Yeah.
It's because in reality, in our lives, most of us never take that step to analyze, to sit back and analyze the situation. And you're just careening from promotion to whatever, then you hit a point, you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Right. 90% of people are in that predicament, even outside of aviation, right?
Like, oh yeah, that's, yeah. That's
most people just live their lives from the seat of their pants. If you actually take the step to sit back, analyze, and then start to try and get answers, and start to use some of the people out there that have started to pull some of these answers out, it's what we talked about earlier. It's not crazy hacks and like voodoo stuff that you've never heard of. It's just like the answers are pretty basic, and
yeah,
you know, there you just have to take the time to actually think about them and apply them to your life.
And I want to reiterate this again to everybody listening. This is not something you have to spend 5 hours a day on. This is small baby steps. Do 5 minutes a day, because you'll be surprised how fast that adds up, and it turns into so much more than you ever thought you could do. No matter what it is, especially those who are starting out on the aviation journey. It's a real pain in the butt. Take it small chunks, small bites at a time. All right. Number two, something that you'd have told young Matt just starting out on his journey, he must do.
Yeah. I think it's a corollary of what we've been talking about, which is to me, it's so easy to get caught up in, and I still find myself doing this even to this day. And it's something that I struggle with still, but if it's so easy to get caught up in an uncertain situation and try to get more certainty before you take action.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, the best solution is to just get comfortable acting in conditions of uncertainty.
Wow. That's a great line. I think for a lot of aviators out there, or especially the potential professional aviator, that's going to be the area that you live in, is you're going to have a lot of situations that are chaotic, frenetic, or extremely boring. You have to get used to every kind of one of those situations and just live within them and create that as your environment. Instead of trying to form your environment around you, you have to form to your environment. Just a little bit different way of saying it that's aviation related, I guess.
Yeah. And I think even at a simpler level, it's like, don't overthink it. Just take action. Like whether it's a change in your career, whether it's starting a side project, whether it's, you know, asking that person out, any of that stuff, it's so easy to just get caught up in the cycle of doubt and fear and overthinking.
Yeah.
Just take action.
Yep. How I even came across, you said in the end of the podcast, you always say, hey, if you got a question, reach out. I try to answer them, or I answer every email. It just may take time.
Every single one.
Yep. And that's amazing. I'm impressed by that. And I wrote Matt and said, hey, I think what your work is great. I'd love to chat with you about coming on the podcast. And here we are. So it took a little while. Schedules had to marry up, but
yep.
Yeah, it was so out there. Yeah, it can be done quite easily. Just
so, do you know why I'm able to say? I say at the end of every single episode, I give my email away.
Yep.
And I say, email me. I respond to every single listener email. Do you know what enables me to do that?
I do not.
It's what we were just talking about. Nobody emails me. Like, I mean, it's like a giant bluff. Everyone's afraid to email me. I mean, I get like 5 or 10 emails a day, but I'm not getting like thousands of emails.
Yeah. Right?
It's just like, I'm just like, hey, email me. I'll answer your question. And like, no, everyone's afraid to send me an email. So
wow,
if you just do it. Like, the reason I'm on your show is because you did it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, like, you could have said, oh, he probably doesn't respond. I just won't send him an email. That's how you just outthink yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of just send it.
Yep, I totally agree. In fact, I will add on to that. Almost every time that I've emailed somebody about being on the show or coming to talk to the group or whatever, the casual declines I get are so very kind and gentle and they're very rare. In fact, one of the big ones was Jeff Skiles. He was the first officer on the Miracle on the Hudson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I emailed him. I did a lot of research trying to find his email address and I got it. And not only is he funny in the way he responds, he was very kind, but he turned us down due to he had some social media things that happened in the past because of his celebrity status that he was done with that life and he no longer liked to speak publicly. However, his response was so awesome and hilarious. And we emailed a few more times after that. That it was a personal, I took it as like, wow, I almost got to, I felt like I got to know one of the guys who did something that was heroic and rare, especially in our industry. I would have never had that chance if I just wouldn't have taken it and emailed him. He actually wrote, he goes, you should ask Sully. And then he went dot, dot, dot. He's too expensive for you. And then that, I thought that was pretty funny because he does have quite the high speaking fee for his engagements. Either way, it was an awesome little thing. And I want to just ask the question. You'd be surprised.
Secret about podcasting is even people that have really high speaking advances will speak on a podcast for free a lot of the time.
Yeah, so. I've learned that one. I'm learning that one rapidly.
Did you ask Sully?
Here's the thing. I can't get in touch with him. So yeah, I went. He's got a. You have to go through his agency. There's like a talent agency that represents him. And I thought, oh, this would be great, military aviators, but you have to go through one of the reps and they're not him. So hopefully maybe somebody out there listening knows him directly and I can get in touch with him. Cause I'd love to just have him on as a pilot and shoot pilot stuff, shoot the pilot breeze, not talk. We don't even have to talk about the Hudson. I don't care about that. We've all seen it a million times. I want to know what was going through their mind before they got, these are the things that pilots want to know. What was going through their mind before they were getting on the airplane. All the stress of his life going on outside of what was happening, because he was having a lot of issues. US Airways was going in the tank. He had a brand new dude with him sitting in the right seat on the 320. There was a lot of other stuff that was going on there. In the movie, it's all about the birds hitting and the miracle that happened. There's so much else out there that I would like to know as a pilot. Now, how many times have they flown before that? All the other stuff that doesn't really get talked about. And you can read the NTSB reports, but those are dry and they're not as personable. By the way, that movie, a lot of flaws. The NTSB was not that rude. They just had to make an antagonist because there was no antagonist. Everybody was very supportive of them. So
yeah.
Anyways, I thought that was great. We actually talked about that on another podcast I did with a group called the Cinerealists, and they talk everything cinema. And we talked about Tom Hanks, Sullenberger, and Sully, the movie, and then your top 10 Tom Hanks favorites. And it was a fun podcast, but we got really in the depth about that stuff. All right, sorry. Yeah, I took you way off there. Number three, what is something that you, because you're not a pilot, find fascinating about aviation industry or pilots in general or anything in that space?
So when I was like 8, maybe 10 years old, I wanted to be a pilot. Like, I had a flight suit that I would wear. I would do flying simulators all the time. I went to Air Force camp. I was super into it. I don't know where cool. I got derailed in my adolescence, but I've always thought pilots were really, really cool and always just been fascinated by it. And, one of the things that in the last couple of years, and this is actually something that I think you personally would really like, I think all of your listeners would really enjoy, I read this book that's probably the best biography or like top two or three biographies I've read in the last like 5 or 6 years. And and as a listener to the Science of Success, you probably know that I'm a pretty voracious reader.
Yes.
And read a lot of stuff. And it's this book about a fighter pilot. And it's the book is called Boyd, The Fighter Pilot Who Changed the Art of War. And without getting into, his story is absolutely nuts. And the writing is incredible. And I actually listened to it as an audiobook. The narration is also amazing. So it's really, really good. His story is crazy. His nickname. So he was basically one of the premier instructors at the fighter weapons school at Nellis Air Force Base, which is, I'm sure all the pilots probably know what that is, but it's basically like the Air Force's Top Gun that existed before Top Gun. Right. Yep. And so he was the premier instructor at Nellis. He fought in Korea, and Vietnam, but he was a premier instructor at Nellis. His nickname was 42nd Boyd because he could win a dogfight in less than 40 seconds. And he basically had a standing challenge. Anybody who wanted to challenge him to a dogfight, he would take him up, like a simulated dogfight. He would take him up, defeat him in less than 40 seconds. So he was an absolute badass. He wrote this thing called the Aerial Attack Study, which is basically one of the I'm sure maybe some of the Air Force guys even know who Boyd is, but.
Oh yeah. I'm sure a lot of people know.
He was actually like disowned by the Air Force, which is this whole thing. And like, they kind of minimize his impact, but he wrote the Aerial Attack Study, which is basically like the first thing ever written about like the dynamics of air-to-air combat. Mm-hmm. He created energy maneuverability, which is basically a performance evaluating tool to look at flight performance at different altitudes and speeds and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably bastardizing the hell out of what that actually is, but
I'm not a fighter guy. You know as much as I do. I just call it energy management. Is okay. How much smash do you have? Are you going too fast, too slow? That's a whole different topic.
So yeah. So EM is basically like looking at like turning speeds and all this stuff. It's like comparing fighter performance across different envelopes of like altitude and stuff. Anyway, he basically left the Air Force to go to grad school and then like came up with this theory that redefined like the way that the Air Force built planes. Like, he was the father of the F-15, the F-16, the A-10 Warthog, like all kinds of aircraft that are like legendary. And then he quit the Air Force and ended up like studying every recorded conflict in human history and creating this like 15-hour military briefing that was called Patterns of Conflict. And he would go like present it to generals and stuff and like teach them about like the principles of war fighting. And then like he went on to do all this, like that's only like the very tip of his,
holy cow,
his journey. And like, he was a total badass too. Like, yeah. He's the kind of guy, like he would always like, he was around like this, 50s, 60s, 70s type of stuff. So like he died in like 92 or something, but he would carry around a big stogie and he would just like put it out on the tie of like a general or whatever that would come and talk to him and, tell him basically to like screw off. And like, that's why he ended up basically getting forced out of the Air Force. Because he was very vocal and like really opposed a lot of the top brass and ended up like getting forced out. And then like the Marines ended up like being a champion of his. It's this whole crazy story, but he's a very fascinating guy. That to me reignited my passion for pilots and that kind of stuff. It's okay. An incredible book. Boyd, The Fighter Pilot Changed the Art of War. Check it out.
Okay. Well, a lot of us are big Robin Olds fans, who's kind of the champion of the Air Force pilot, especially the fighter pilot, always bucking authority if he needed to. But yeah, that's one. I know one friend who will definitely have read it. My buddy Joe, who is a fighter pilot for KC-135s with me as well. I could go on a whole litany of stuff that he's done. But he is a voracious reader like yourself, and he always tries to share great books with me. And that one, now maybe I can beat him to the punch, but I doubt it. He's always got me beaten. Plenty of my fighter pilot buddies who will hear this podcast will either A, correct me on what you said, or B, said, wow, that's pretty impressive for a guy who's never actually been in the seat pulling 8.5 Gs in the merge.
I cannot express to you how like fighter pilots would love the way that this book is written. I mean, he's like, the way he talks about it, like the way he talks about being a fighter pilot makes it sound like the most badass thing of all time. And they knew that it was the most badass thing of all time. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like talking about like dragging like 10 ton testicles across the desert at 300 miles an hour and stuff like, I mean, it's, the writing is amazing. So I would highly recommend checking that out.
Yeah. That's going on my list.
What we talked about, but
Who cares? No, that's fast. That's fascinating aviation stuff right there. There are plenty of guys who probably will check it out. I have my list of books, and I'm going to add that one. I've got a first, hopefully in the next 2 days, Why We Sleep is going to get done. And then I got to throw a biographical one on there as well, because I haven't read any biographies in a while.
It's a biography. There Perfect. You go.
That's what I like. Well, Matt, we've gone way over time, and I know that you have a busy schedule. I appreciate you just carving a little bit out for us at the Pilot Network. This is awesome. I've been looking forward to this since the day that we were able to get on your schedule. And I wanted to give the last words to you, and then also where my folks can hear you, read you, and reach you.
Yeah, well, Adam, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. For people who want to check out what I'm up to, The Science of Success is the name of the podcast. It's available anywhere where podcasts can be found. If you want to check out our website, it's pretty simple. It's successpodcast.com.
I've been there many times, and I truly enjoy not only the podcast, but Matt, you also, Matt gave me a nice compliment, said I got a good radio voice for the future. Matt, you got a good one yourself.
I did say that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So for all of you who want to reach me and actually email me, so this is the big bluff that I'm going to give. I want you to email me ASAP. Tell me what you think of the show. Tell me what you want to hear more of at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org or reach us on the socials, you know, Instagram, Facebook, whatever else you want to do out there, I'm sure we'll reply. If you've got any suggestions, or as you know, I posted in the group, we're going to have a very high-ranking official talking about the quote-unquote pilot crisis that the Air Force is facing, the military in general. If you have questions, or you want to comment on something, or you want to get something off your chest, hit me up, heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org, and write me. Doesn't matter what you say, I will get it to him. I may not ask it in the way that you have worded it. I may have to fine tune it and dial it down a bit. But that's my goal. I want you to feel confident that you can get your word across to these folks. So Matt, thanks again. I'm looking forward to the next episode of Science of Success. And hopefully we'll have a bunch of people who are bettering themselves through growth-based evidence, or evidence-based growth. There we go. I flipped
that's
it around.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks again, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Remember, everybody, keep the greasy side down and the shiny side up. Fly safe.